Call the meeting to order. This meeting will be held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. Roll call, Mr. Smith.
Chair Sundin is present. Vice Chair Vang.
Present.
Vang present. Anderson.
Anderson present.
Anderson present. Eklund.
Present.
Eklund present. Burkle.
Present.
Burkle present. Hansen R.
Hansen R present.
Hansen R present. Hansen J.
Hansen J present.
Hansen J present. Cleavorn.
Cleavorn present.
Cleavorn present. Lippert. Lippert is excused. Lewick. Lewick. Representative Miller.
Miller present.
Miller present. Nelson.
Nelson present.
Nelson present. Thompson.
Thompson present.
Thompson present. We have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
At the minutes of the 14th meeting of the Ag Committee were provided with the meeting material and posted online. Vice Chair Vang, if you've reviewed the minutes, can I get a motion?
Yes, Vice Chair, I move the adoption of the minutes for the meeting of March 1st, 2021.
Any questions or corrections on those minutes? Seeing none, hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. Okay, the motion prevails, the minutes are adopted. We have a presentation by the University of Minnesota on Ag Research Plus 3 bills. All the meeting material was posted on in advance. We'll start with the presentation. We have 40 minutes blocked for this segment, including time for some questions. We have the presentation by University of Minnesota AGREET transfer program. Target time, we're going to wrap this up in about a half an hour. AGREET is a significant component of the committee's general fund budget, so we wanted to give the university a chance to come in and explain their work and how the state funding is being used. Dean Boer, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Chair Sundin. I'm Brian Boer. I'm Dean of the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resources at the University of Minnesota. I want to thank you and members of the committee for inviting us here today to talk about AGREET legislation. I'm going to share some slides. These are also in your materials, I believe. Also with me today, I have a key part of AGREET, which is the acronym for Agricultural Research, Education, Extension, and Technology Transfer. Joining me today are four of the faculty and extension educators who have been hired under this legislation. And I'll just start off with a quick overview of the impacts and purpose of AGREET and some of the background. I also do want to note that joining us today, is Dean Beverly Durgan, Dean of Extension at the University of Minnesota, and Dean Laura Molgaard, who is the Dean of the College of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Minnesota. And those three units collaborate with regard to AGREET and are part of this partnership to advance Minnesota's agriculture and sustain its productivity. Sorry about that. So this is the, I won't read through this, but briefly, this legislation was passed in 2015. The purpose of it is clearly to support the agricultural productivity growth through research, education, extension as a long-term source of funding. The priorities, which is why we'll talk about faculty and extension educators and have them present today, was on this term human infrastructure, the people that we hire to do the work that provides the capacity to engage in the research and extension and education program, and it goes along with this research. As part of this, there's an advisory panel, and the funding goes through the Department of Agriculture and then is directed to the University of Minnesota to implement. As part of that, an advisory group that consists of approximately 23 members helps to advise on what the priorities are, where we might make investments, and to have the greatest impact possible on the communities and people of Minnesota. So that's the core bare bones of the program. As I said, there's two other, the the faculty are the key and educators are the key component of that. I'll talk a little bit more about the scope of that. Another component was rapid response funds. And as we're all aware, certainly over the past year, issues come up, things like in agriculture, we think of chronic wasting disease, avian influenza is on this slide, challenges with water quality, invasive species. These rapid response fund component provides the ability to respond to immediate projects. And so there's a portion of funding that goes to that. And then there was funding dedicated to avian influenza research. I will note here that as part of the broader GREET package, there is funding for the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council, and there's other funding for some other directed uses. But for today, what we're focusing on is primarily the GREET funding that's going into, which is roughly $4.9 million that goes into these activities that are part of that advisory group and the faculty and educators that go with that. As I'd mentioned, the partnership for this extends across CFANS, the College of Food, Agriculture, Natural Resource Sciences, Veterinary Medicine, and Extension. So there are personnel hired amongst each of those programs. Right now, and this is since it's been in place, it's been a rolling process to get the faculty and Extension educators on board for this. Currently, there are 11 Extension educators, and they're stationed across Minnesota, working in all areas related to ag and food systems. So, for example, today we'll hear from an Extension educator working on grape production and fruit crops in Minnesota. Others working, for example, on dairy financial sustainability. Others working in water quality related issues, and so on. So, covering a vast array of the aspects of agriculture and food systems. And I will note, we also have on the faculty side of this, forestry is part of GREET. So we have a forest faculty member who works with Northern Minnesota and the forestry industry. There are 20 faculty that have been hired with GREET, and they engage in research, teaching, and extension. Those faculty, again, are across all three of those units. And we still have about 2 to 3 more potential hires as we have the funding available for that. The areas that this relates to, and this is very broadly speaking, just as examples of areas where there's been investments, and want to make the emphasis that it is a healthier, more sustainable state. We'll talk about economic impacts in a moment. One key area is development of new crops for environmental health and profits. That's part of CFANS. One of the faculty members presenting today will discuss that and the role there. And that has been a project that you'll hear about, I think, a little bit after our presentation that relates to new and novel crops that are cover crops that sustain soil and water, in addition to providing profitable outcomes for farmers and businesses. Second area in the College of Veterinary Medicine, we'll be hearing a bit from today, is combating antimicrobial resistance. We're certainly concerned about the health and well-being and welfare of animals that are raised for livestock production systems. One of our challenges is that some of the treatments for livestock that are very effective in herd health promotion are under strain from resistance factors of bacteria that are adapting to some of those treatments. So working to try to improve that sustainability is a key part as well. And the third item I have here is extension, working on, in this case, on food safety training. So as we work with, whether it's urban, think about the community gardens, for example. You think about the Hmong Farming Associations, looking at raising produce for urban and rural communities, focused on food safety so that we keep both the produce safe and the people that are consuming that healthy. So a broad array. And one of the things we tried to do with this is we often had the overarching mantra of doing the most good for the most people. So we tried to stay in these areas that each one of these are that have impacts beyond the particular agricultural area, but to include what are the issues related to the environment, what are issues related to broad farmer profitability, and really tried to make this impactful across all segments and participants in the state's ag and food systems. And I think you'll note that there's some support in the meeting notes as well that suggests that we've been hitting that mark pretty well, so that we didn't turn out to be, one position for every area, but really thinking broadly about how we both collaborated across these units within the university, and then again had the most impact on the most Minnesotans, and has been, I think, quite successful at that. And this is just a quick, we'll spend a lot of time here, but we have people located at the, as you look at these maps, the one on the left are our research and outreach centers that are part of CFANS.med and Extension. And the map on the right are the Extension regional offices. So many of these people are out in the state, some are here in the Twin Cities on the St. Paul campus, of course, but really we touch every part of the state and every segment of that related to food and agriculture with these hires. So really having a fantastic impact on the sustainability of our state's resources as well as the economy of the state. Just a sense of the economic aspect of this. What are the returns to the state from this work? This is a very direct return. I'll talk in a minute about some of the ROIs to ag research, but the faculty who've been hired, and to have a sense of this, this has been over 5 years, and this has been, we've only gotten to 20 this last year. In fact, one of those faculty was just hired this spring. So really we've had an average of roughly 5 to 10 faculty on board during this time that accounts for this funding. But these are sources of grants that those faculty have generated. So USDA National Institute of Food and Agriculture, one of our primary granting agencies, Natural Resource Conservation Services, National Science Foundation, National Institutes of Health, University of Wisconsin, good to get some of that Badger money flowing into Minnesota, the National Pork Board. So industry is helping to fund. They've generated $32 million in grants already. And I say that because that ignores the fact that with extension programming, there's revenues generated from, of course, those activities. Many of these faculty are teaching our next generation of scientists, bringing them into the fields that are needed for sustainability and economic outcomes for ag and food. That ignores those streams that come in that are also revenue. So this roughly $4.9 million a year has already covered those directly, and we expect that to continue throughout. So just incredibly impressed. And as you talk to the supporters of this, the groups that are part of the advisory group, the Department of Agriculture, our partners in other areas, have had really strong support, and it demonstrates the impact that this has had on the state, the university, and more broadly. So we thank you for that. This is some research we've done, and it is for the Ag Committee. I thought it was important to bring this up. We have a person at the University of Minnesota, Phil Pardee, who researches extensively on what are the returns to research in agriculture. And an important part about agriculture and food is it does impact everybody's life. Anybody who's consuming food, anybody who's engaged in agriculture, certainly the environment. And so looked at a careful assessment of what are the returns on investment for a dollar invested. And this isn't specific to agri, but just to keep in mind that in Minnesota, we looked at this by states, we get $40 in returns for every dollar invested in research. And most of those returns accrue to the consumers, the people consuming our food. It accrues to the lower income phase of parts of our state because, of course, food costs and food availability and nutrition are a key part of that. And the subtext of this is that nationally, it's about $21 to $1. And the reason for that differential is that Minnesota, we know about our favorable climate, the rain-fed agriculture that we have, the soils that are highly fertile from our geological history. We're just a place that does well at agriculture and food. And so it makes particular sense to invest here in Minnesota. And we're grateful that the state and the legislature, the governor's office have supported these investments and the impact that they've had. So with that, we have some time here. We wanted to introduce you to a few of the faculty. I will take questions. I think after these faculty are done, we welcome questions on this. But I'll move right into Professor Heidi Roop, who's joining us from the Soil, Water, and Climate Department. She's a climatologist by training. She's worked from Antarctica to Vietnam. So she's experienced all forms of weather and climate in her work. And so Heidi, welcome. And I will be running the slides. So we'll move from there. Heidi, thank you for joining us.
Great. Thank you, Chair Sundin and members of the Agricultural Finance and Policy Committee for this opportunity to speak with you briefly today. My name is Dr. Heidi Roop. I'm a new assistant professor in the Department of Soil, Water, and Climate, and I'm also a new extension specialist for climate science. I joined the university about 7 months ago, and I'm really thrilled to call the Midwest home again. I grew up in Wisconsin, but my career has taken me outside of the region, but I'm really thrilled to be back. It goes without saying that Minnesota is known for its iconic weather and its extremes, some of which we have just experienced, from our frigid winters to sun-soaked summers, which hopefully are on the way. However, our baseline of climate is shifting to one that's warmer and wetter. We're observing warming winters, we're experiencing a change in the length of our growing season, and we're seeing and documenting an increase in precipitation. And we expect these changes to continue as we march forward in time. And of course, all of these changes challenge and stress our farmlands, our rural and urban communities, and our natural environment. Next slide, please. Managing our exposure to these increasing climate risks requires, of course, both an understanding of new and emerging climate impacts and innovative, creative, and practical thinking around how we manage our exposure to these changes. To address these emerging challenges, like those posed by floods and droughts or changing crop suitability, we need to identify new management approaches and options and increase our engagement across the state to understand the on-the-ground realities of these changes and critically, how it is that we design and deploy solutions and adaptations that work. Next slide, please. The University of Minnesota, through a grant funding and this position, is making a concrete investment in our expansion of our climate services work. Through my extension programming that's in development and the planned growth of the Minnesota Climate Adaptation Partnership, we are working to deliver critical climate information to all Minnesotans. The partnership is the state's only multi-sector statewide group working on climate adaptation. We represent a partnership spanning everything from state and federal agencies to the private sector and nonprofits to city and county governments and higher education. We bring together these diverse perspectives in a dedication to expanding the provision of trusted and place-specific climate information. And we're working to enhance climate literacy from the classroom to the community. We engage with farmers asking about the implications of climate change on lands they're looking to purchase and in deciding what crops to grow, to helping to support the climate resiliency planning that's underway in many communities and counties across the state. In January, for example, we convened over 250 Minnesotans virtually to discuss climate adaptation and climate equity, and to work in supporting of advancing climate preparedness across the state and the greater Midwest region. Our growing body of planned work spans everything from interactive data visualizations with detailed Minnesota-specific future climate data to research into how decisions are being made around agricultural water use and nutrient management under changing climate extremes. We help to effectively communicate university, national, and international research to audiences across the state, and are actively investing in and leveraging federal research dollars in support of data generation, the provision of technical services, and the development of communications resources that are really needed to enhance regional resilience and that are needed to engage stakeholders across the state, and critically to leverage science to address real-world pressing challenges that we're experiencing today. Next slide, please. And of course, with any grand challenge like that of thinking about our weather and our climate systems and what that means for Minnesotans and for our communities and economies, we really need systems and people-centered approaches. So the university and Extension, through this role and all of the research that it does with my colleagues and peers across the university, we're well positioned to help champion this climate work. But partnership and collaboration are really the only way that we can do this work in a meaningful and useful way on the landscape. So we can't just strive to design or move dirt differently or tell people how to reduce their exposures to risks. We need to collaboratively design and conduct this work in a way that responds to community and sector specific needs. And our programming is being designed to be responsive in this way and to build and sustain these critical partnerships. And of course, I just want to highlight this includes working with and listening to the state and its needs and priorities. And in fact, to date, I've not been here very long, but in thinking about the highlights, my partnerships and collaborations and interactions with state agencies has been really one of the highlights. I've interacted with and have planned interactions with a range of state agencies from the Department of Agriculture to the Department of Health, working on understanding how we can expand and grow investments in climate resiliency across the state. But critically, as the state shifts in a direction, including that of potential funds dedicated to climate resilience for Minnesotan communities, we're really working at the university to make sure we're well positioned to provide the needed data and science and communications resources that will help ensure strategic, economical, and climate-informed decisions are being made across all of Minnesota's diverse landscapes, our businesses, and our communities. So I'm really excited to continue to see this work grow and hopefully report back to you on what we're doing and what we've done. I see 2021 as a pivotal year for our climate and adaptation programming at the university and for our state as we work towards building climate-ready communities. So I thank you so much for the opportunity to contribute professionally to this meaningful work.
Thank you so much. Dean Berry, would you like to introduce your next testifier?
Yes, thank you, Chair Sundin. Our next testifier is Annie Claude. She's an extension educator and works in the area of fruit crops, includes grapes and apples. So with our latest Itasca grape coming out, it's again relevant. We're excited about that. And she's affiliated with the Department of Horticultural Science and is at the Horticultural Research Center, which is out near the Arboretum. So Annie.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you so much for having me today and giving us this opportunity to talk about the importance of the AGREET funding. So I am a statewide extension educator for fruit and vegetable production, which means that I primarily work with fruit farmers and vegetable farmers throughout the state of Minnesota. So I work with apple orchards, berry farms, vineyards, cideries, and then I also work with a couple of other vegetable crops that those farms commonly grow, including asparagus and pumpkins. And since I'm a full-time extension educator, my main job is to support these farmers with research-based recommendations and information in order to help them optimize the success of their crop production, the success of their farms, with the ultimate goal that we all have of trying to get more fresh, nutritious, local food into the mouths of Minnesotans. That's the goal that we all share. And I do this in a number of ways. And so what I want to do today in my 5 minutes is give you a few examples of the work that I and my teammates are doing that I think are worth highlighting. So the first one, and I'll just draw your attention to this slide. The photos on here are just some examples, photos I took during my work. The one on the lower left-hand corner is an example of how we've been pivoting virtually to take some of our education online through instructional videos this year. The middle one is more of a traditional extension approach, which is getting growers together for field days to demonstrate things for them out in the field. So we're at a vineyard that day. And the third one to the right is a picture from an orchard where we're doing some experimental hard cider apple variety evaluations to create a new crop and a new market for some of our apple orchards. One of the ways that we reach farmers is through the fruit and vegetable news. This is just an example of the type of work that we do. I started the fruit and vegetable newsletter and blog in 2018, about 6 months after I started. And we have 903 subscribers right now, mostly fruit and vegetable farmers within our state. And the articles we've written have gotten over 120,000 views since 2018. And this newsletter is something that didn't exist before this AGREET funding allowed me to do it. And it's a way to make sure that these growers are getting the timely information that they need to succeed throughout the growing season. This has been a really important way for us to connect. And since we've had to pivot during COVID-19, another example of our work is the Cold Climate Fruit webinar series, which we started in April, right after we were all shut down and needed to be inside due to COVID. And so we couldn't do these field days anymore. And so I got in touch with colleagues from University of Wisconsin, and we started a cross-state partnership in order to offer weekly or bi-weekly webinars to get farmers together and talk about what they need to be focusing on at each point in the growing season so that they can remain successful. Next slide, please. And speaking of COVID-19, one of the things that we spent a lot of time, me and my teammates, who are also AGREET funded, during this past season was helping UPIC farms, so think UPIC apple orchards, strawberry farms, operate safely during COVID-19. This went for farmers that were selling at farmers markets in the metro area and other cities as well. So what you see here are examples of ways that farms had to pivot this year and keep themselves and their customers safe during COVID-19. Hand sanitizer stations, signs stating their guidelines and social distancing recommendations. And a lot of these were the result of my team members and myself working with those farmers. My teammates, Annalisa Holtberg and Natalie Hoytel, created a template that farmers could use to create their COVID preparedness plan. I collaborated with the commissioner's office to lead a phone call between 12 of our UPIC apple orchards and the commissioner's office and the Department of Health to make sure that those orchards were set for the season before they had customers coming out for the fall. And so our team was doing a lot of work, and this was due to the AGREET funding that we were able to do this. Next slide, please. So as I said before, our focus is on research-based information. This is very important in crop production because agriculture is so science-based, right? And sometimes when we get questions from farmers about, you know, how do I do this on my farm? How do I grow this new crop? How do I be more sustainable? Sometimes we don't have those answers yet. And we need to partner with researchers in order to get those answers. So this is just one example of that. There's a big interest in Minnesota apple orchards and fruit farms in general about being more economically and environmentally sustainable at the same time. And a big part of that is cutting down on insecticide use and being more chemical free. And so one thing that we're doing is we're trying to repurpose hail netting, which apple orchards sometimes place over their apple trees to protect them from hail, in order to keep out insect pests that would otherwise devastate their crops. The idea of this is to minimize or completely eliminate insecticide use in apple orchards from about May until the end of the season. And so I partnered with Bill Hutchinson's lab in the University of Minnesota Entomology Department to work on this. And we received grant funding this past winter, about $200,000 from Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Next slide, please. Our team also works extensively with the Hmong farming community. We have a strong partnership with the Hmong American Farmers Association, and we are often asked by the association to come out and do trainings on their farms. So food safety training, vegetable production training, as well as more recently, fruit production training. We were recently approached by HAFA leadership saying that a lot of the farmers were interested in growing more perennial crops in order to improve soil health on their farms. And so I have been working in partnership with them and the Sustainable Farming Association to lead a number of asparagus production workshops, because asparagus was a crop that the HAFA farmers were very interested in growing. And so we've been able to go out there and help them, a number of farmers, produce asparagus and sell it at the farmers markets for the first time. Raspberries are another crop that they're very interested in growing. And we've been doing some field visits to help them grow raspberries. And more recently, we got a grant together to lead workshops to teach growers how to grow strawberries for the first time. So strawberries are a very high value crop that Hmong American farmers have expressed a lot of interest in. And so I'm working with them this summer, starting this summer, to grow this new crop on their farms. So that's just a few examples of the type of work that me and my team members do in the horticulture team.
Thank you very much. We're running up against the clock here a little bit. We have 20 minutes left for two testifiers and questions. So please move about your testimony quite briskly, please.
Thank you, Chair Sundin. Our next presenter is Jake Jungers. He's a professor in agronomy and plant genetics and working in developing new crop systems for mitigating the environmental impacts and lowering greenhouse gas emissions. With that, Dr. Jungers.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thanks so much for the opportunity to speak today. As Burr said, I'm Jake Jungers, assistant professor in agronomy and plant genetics here at the University of Minnesota. I'd like to share with you just a little bit about my background, my career goals as an AGREET faculty member, and then some of the activities I've led working towards these goals since starting in 2019. I want to mention that I'm a first-generation college graduate, that I never imagined that I would someday finish a PhD program, much less become a college professor at one of the top research institutions in the world. My academic achievements were made possible from some incredibly supportive teachers and mentors. And that's what drives me. I'm driven as a teacher and researcher to pay that support forward to the next generation of agriculturalists and land managers here in Minnesota. I work to not only educate these students, but to inspire and to support them in their work towards their career goals, but also to become positive contributors to the agricultural community, the state, and society as a whole. My position is 50% teaching and 50% research. I'm going to share with you just a bit more about my work in those roles. Next slide, please. I have the pleasure of teaching two CFANS undergraduate courses at the U. The first is a non-majors entry-level agricultural course. And because this is a non-majors class, I have the opportunity to connect with students that come from a broad background, a broad interest in STEM, and can connect them to agriculture. Many of these students who are interested in topics like plant biology, biochemistry, even big data and informatics, I can show them how their interests might align with the innovations in agriculture here in our state. Through my research program, I can provide urban students with internships to work on field experiments in greater rural Minnesota. Next slide, please. I'm also working to engage with the rural high school students to expose them to the exciting research and work that's being done at the U, to show them how a college education from the University of Minnesota can translate to gratifying careers in agriculture. This photo highlights an example of how I'm doing that. Here I'm in the field with FFA students, the local FFA coordinator, and a local farmer, as well as a high school ag teacher from the Ricoree High School District in Cold Spring, Minnesota. We're planting a field of a new perennial grain crop right outside the high school to serve as a living lab for secondary and post-secondary educational events. Next slide, please. I also strive to connect my research to communities throughout Minnesota. My research goal is to develop new crops and cropping systems that simultaneously increase profitability and environmental sustainability of agriculture in Minnesota. So one of the new crops that I lead a research program on is Kernza, which is North America's first perennial grain crop. You can see it has a deep, dense root system, and this can provide many environmental benefits, including a reduction of nitrogen to the groundwater. I'm currently leading projects that involve the wide range of agricultural stakeholders, including drinking water providers, municipalities like the city of Chatfield, Laverne, Cold Spring, Minnesota Department of Ag, and of course, farmers. This work has resulted in large-scale plantings of this perennial crop in these ecologically sensitive areas of the state called wellhead protection areas. And there we're protecting the groundwater, which is the main source of drinking water for most rural communities, from nitrogen pollution. Next slide, please. The research I'm doing on Kernza here in Minnesota has major implications for the United States and beyond. Our early work on this new crop, which was supported through many collaborations, including the Forever Green Initiative and our partners at the Magnuson Research Farm in Roseau, Minnesota, and many others, this early work has positioned Minnesota as the epicenter of research and implementation of Kernza, really at the national scale. I helped our team leverage this opportunity by leading a $10 million USDA grant. This grant, which is centered here at the University of Minnesota, includes 8 other partnering universities and a team of more than 50 different individuals from businesses, NGOs, state agencies, and farmers. This project has helped support entrepreneurs launch new businesses here in Minnesota, including Perennial Pantry, which is in Bloomington, Minnesota. They're now selling Kernza products to the public nationally, as you can see from the image in the slide. I want to mention that Kernza is just one of the new crops that is in my research portfolio and that of the Forever Greens. I also study existing perennial crops like alfalfa, which is critically important to our agricultural economy. I'm very grateful to the AGREET program, which has supported me to do this exciting teaching and research work. I'm also grateful to a long list of collaborators, too many to list and acknowledge in this presentation, but I want to thank them and I want to thank you for your time, and please feel free to reach out with any questions or comments.
Thank you. Dean Bird.
Hey, Chair Sundin. Oh, thank you, Chair Sundin. Our next presenter is Dr. Noelle Noyes. She's in the College of Veterinary and Population or Veterinary Medicine in the Department of Population Medicine, and she conducts research on modeling improving pre-harvest food safety, working with industry, university, and government partners. Dr. Noyes.
Thanks, Dean Burr. Thank you, Chair Sundin and members of the committee. I'm Noelle Noyes, Assistant Professor at the College of Veterinary Medicine. I'm very happy to be speaking with you today. I came to the University of Minnesota and to Minnesota, the state, for the first time in 2018. and with the support of the AGREET funding. And since then, we've been building a program looking at antibiotic resistance, which is unfortunately something that has probably impacted members of this committee. It's something that is a growing threat for human health, and that's something that we also deal with as veterinarians and livestock producers. So on this slide, you can see that our research portfolio is very broad and touches on multiple species, livestock and aquatic, and multiple different aspects of food production, including things like worker safety for agricultural workers. Because of the AGREET program, we've had really great success in bringing in research dollar support for this work. I will say that sort of the name recognition of AGREET and the ability to have a strong cohort of other researchers and extension specialists has really raised the competitiveness of our research proposals and has enabled us to bring this funding into the university and into Minnesota. And I think that that name recognition is something that's very unique to the state of Minnesota and to the AGREET program. And so the success that I'm demonstrating on this slide with all of the various funders and all of the various research areas is really a testament to the AGREET program and the support that we receive at the University of Minnesota for that. Next slide, please, Dean Burr. So the research in my lab really spans the gamut all the way from working in the field all the way through to analyzing data. And so on the left-hand side, you'll see here some sampling events that we've undertaken within Minnesota. And these occur on dairy farms, in Minnesota lakes, swine farms, numerous other ecosystems across Minnesota. And again, the reason that we're able to collect these very valuable samples is because we have the name of AGREET behind our research and people recognize that across the state. We also have funding to do some very advanced molecular lab work, which you can see in the middle here, with students involved in all aspects of this. And then we also use some very unique resources that also are supported with AGREET at the sequencing center, where we sequence DNA on a regular basis, and then also some high performance computing, quantum computing that we perform through resources that are also supported. With that, next slide, please, Dean Bird. So one thing I want to note is that on the previous slide, all of those activities took place within Minnesota, which is quite unique to be able to do something all the way from the farm, all the way through to high performance computing within one state and with such great support. We also have a very strong outreach program. So we conduct workshops across the state of Minnesota, nationally and internationally. These workshops are attended, of course, by academics, but also industry partners and government officials who are very interested in using some of the new techniques that we're developing within our lab. So we try to bring those to the more general public. We also provide scientific expertise for policy making and regulations. We're part of the Minnesota One Health Antibiotic Stewardship Collaborative, which is from the Minnesota Department of Health. And we also provide expertise nationally and internationally regarding antibiotic resistance surveillance. And all of this is in the goal of using scientific discovery to really improve the health of humans. Animals, of course, as a veterinarian, I'm very interested in that, and the environment, and keeping livestock production sustainable. So with that, I thank you for your time, and I'm really happy to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Dean Burr, do you want to wrap up your presentation, and we've got a couple minutes for questions.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I hope you found, I want to thank our presenters today. As you can see, a couple of them used the words game changing, and I think that's probably not too strong. And they represent, you can see the enthusiasm, the mission driven view they bring to this, their dedication. It's just, and I want you to imagine there's 27 more out here at the University of Minnesota. So I think it was Dr. Noyes who said that this really put us in a different competitive orbit in attracting grants, in attracting top quality faculty, in impacting agriculture across the state. This, I want to say, is due to the vision of both the legislature. I want to acknowledge the Department of Agriculture, who's been a good partner. Commissioner Frederickson, originally, now Commissioner Peterson, have been instrumental in helping us to manage this. And I want to recognize our agricultural partners. And one of the really extraordinary things was, as all of Minnesota, we have different perspectives, different viewpoints, different objectives, different goals, but everybody came together across a wide spectrum to recognize that for Minnesota, investment in agriculture and technology, extension education, bringing that out to the communities was a critical investment for Minnesota, given the changes in climate, the changes in pressures on cropping systems, the changes we're seeing in technology, that we and the need, as I think it was Dr. Youngers who mentioned, this next generation of scientists and professionals working in this area. So it truly is one of those investments, I think, that will continue to yield returns for the coming years. And I want to thank all of our partners in agriculture, the legislature, Department of Agriculture, and others who I may be forgetting. It's been quite a group, and we really appreciate that support at the University of Minnesota. So thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much. Any questions from the committee? Okay, I'll start off with a comment and a question. I guess the committee administrator and I actually toured the Cloquet facility, the Forestry Research Center, a few years back, and were educated a little bit on their work. And I guess the unique part, I don't know if it's unique, a good part of that facility is they house people there, and for seminars, for classes, for multiple, it's a kind of a multi-use facility. Are there, are your other outpost facilities equipped to do the same as far as housing students and hosting seminars, that type of thing?
Yes, Chair Sundin, thank you for that question. Yeah, the Cloquet Forest Center is a unique resource, and we do have 10 other, well, 9 other research and outreach centers that are similar to that across the state. It depends on the location. So for example, with Crookston, which is our Northwest Research and Outreach Center, and Morris, which is the North or the West Central Research and Outreach Center, we do have facilities there because they're co-located with other University of Minnesota, Crookston, for example, and University of Minnesota Morris. Our other facilities, we have some limited housing for researchers who may be staying there, but it's very limited. So Cloquet is unique in that it does allow us to do extensive teaching there in forest management and forest products research, as well as construction design, and does have an extraordinary base for doing that research. And I will mention, I mentioned a forestry faculty member who is and a GREET member who's working on biometrics in those forests. So, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We have a few questions we can move through quickly, I hope. Representative John Thompson.
Thank you, Chair. I was listening to Amy Claude speak, and I heard her mention that they were doing some work with the Hmong community, which I thank you so much. I appreciate that, because we definitely have a lot of Hmong farmers and people who are interested in this field. But then I, too, also heard Brian and yourself, Chair, talk about Cloquet. And I've been to Cloquet in Duluth, Virginia, Hibbing, Minnesota, Two Harbors, Minnesota. And one thing I noticed is they have a lot of poor people also who could benefit. And so even with the presentation, I didn't see a lot of diversity in the representation. And I was wondering if you were cognizant of that. And is there an opportunity to spread this out to the Hmong, the Native American, Somali, African American, I can bring some diversity to, because this is a field that a lot of times these particular demographic people are left out of, but these are also career pathways, Chair, and so I just wanted to just make sure that you knew, even in the slides that I was looking at as an African American male, I'm looking for diversity, just because there's an opportunity to have that conversation. And you know, even if you weren't cognizant of it, now we are. We're here now. And so what do we do to correct that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Thompson, that's an excellent question. And we do need to focus more on diversity and inclusion in these programs. We have work to do in that area. I'll mention a few of those. This was a small set of the activities we do at the University of Minnesota. But for example, extension, and I apologize, Dean Durgan, I think, was going to be in this room. She's not here, but they do work with for example, the Somali community, and we have nutrition programs that work explicitly with underrepresented minorities, and they're particular cultural dimensions of different types of foods and how does that affect within their communities. We have a program called Seeds of Native Health. It's been a 5-year joint project with the Shakopee Mdewakanton Sioux as a sponsor, have been very generous in supporting that we provide. It's a partnership that works with Native American community on issues of nutrition and dietary health and the particular needs of that population, which does have a higher level of diabetes in the population. We've worked at a program called Food Charters that works across communities. And when you mentioned Northern Minnesota, that looks at how can we develop community gardening systems there. And in the Twin Cities, several projects working across Minneapolis with the community garden associations, both in, for example, one person works on most of our soils in the Twin Cities, and particularly, I forget the name of the gardening association. It's right near the Rondo community, Frogtown area. And all those soils have been disturbed, of course, as we call them, disturbed soils from construction and other activities. So soil scientists that work in how do you manage soils in an urban environment. So Representative Thompson, your comment is well taken. We're working certainly to address those issues. We have programs and we'd welcome partnerships to do that work and recognize our diverse communities in Minnesota.
Representative Anderson, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question for Dr. Roop, if she's still available. I see she's online. Doctor, I had heard a presentation a couple of months back from a professor at the NDSU, and he was talking about they are utilizing bur oak trees along the creeks and rivers in North Dakota. And based on the size of the rings in the trees and such, when they cut them down, there's a fairly reliable 25 to 50 year pattern of wetter years and drier years, at least in that part of the country. Would you agree with that the wetter and drier patterns seem to be fluctuating on a somewhat timely pattern, or are we just tending to go wetter as you commented in your presentation?
Dr. Roop?
Yeah, Representative Anderson, thank you for that question. I do have a background in paleo climatology, which we would derive from, you know, things like tree rings help us provide the historical context to put, you know, current observations and future projections sort of in context with the past. I'm not directly familiar with that tree ring study. I do know that there are researchers actively seeking grant funding to do similar research around patterns of precipitation, sort of drought to extreme rainfall within the state of Minnesota. We're working on submitting that proposal here soon. But in terms of our observed patterns of change, the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources State Climatology Office recently just shared a new data with me that includes 2020 that shows that we are seeing a very clear trend towards warmer and wetter conditions. In fact, since 1997, our 10 combined warmest and wettest years, they've all occurred post-1997, and that's for quite a lengthy observed record that goes back to the early 1900s. We're really fortunate in Minnesota to have robust long-term climate observations. So in terms of what we're observing on average across the state, it is that warmer, wetter pattern. However, under future climate conditions, we do expect to be experiencing sort of both ends of those extremes. So periods that maybe are overall wetter and warmer, but where we also are experiencing drought conditions. And so we anticipate a future where we're going to be needing to navigate and manage operating comfortably, if we can, at both ends of those extremes. So that's both observed and projected climate data support that. Unfortunately, not very clear response, which is we need to plan for both.
Thank you. Representative Lewick, we have time. We don't have time, but please make your question quick and response quick, please.
Mr. Chair, not a question, just a quick comment. I just wanted to compliment all the testifiers and the GREET program really reaches deep. There are a lot of things that we enjoy today, both at a very small scale at the local gardener level, all the way up to a variety of things in agriculture and forestry industry that first spark of research or interest started out in a small program or grant. And so this is, you never know when you're going to hit the new species of apple or, you know, you name it, a new way to grow something or a new crop. And that it's a good long-term benefit that we could need to continue to support. So with that, how's that for being short, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, love it. Thank you, Representative Lur. Next up, we have House File 661. Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I would like to make a motion that we move House File 661 to be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resource Finance and Policy.
You have presenters?
I do, Mr. Chair, and we have three testifiers today. If my bill is before the committee, I will start my presentation.
Yes, bills before the committee, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I appreciate being with you today to introduce House File 661. This bill appropriates $5 million per year in fiscal year 22 and fiscal year 23 from the Clean Water Fund to the Minnesota Department of Agriculture for grants to the University of Minnesota to fund the Forever Green Initiative. I will keep my comments very brief. With me today are experts who will talk about the value of this nationally recognized Forever Green platform and the importance of delivering high efficiency agricultural systems for improved soil and water quality and providing new agricultural, environmental, and economic opportunities for our farmers, industry, and in fact, all Minnesotans. After we hear from the testifiers, Mr. Chair, we will be happy to answer questions from the committee. And with that, Mr. Chair, I ask that you please recognize Dr. Don Wise of the University of Minnesota.
Dr. Wise, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, I'm Don Wise. I'm a professor at the University of Minnesota Department of Agronomy and Plant Genetics. So, Chair Sutton, I will take just a few minutes to give a little overview and then open it up to other testifiers that will follow if that's appropriate.
Thank you.
So I know a number of you on the committee are well aware of the Forever Green Initiative. It's been a program that's been in place for about 20 years. And over the last number of years, there's been increased investment in the program through the legislative process, through the Clean Water Legacy funds over the last few years. And what I wanted to do is just to give you a brief statement about what the Forever Green Initiative is all about. It's really designed to continue to develop new crops for the state of Minnesota with a primary focus on winter annuals and perennial crops. And Jake Jungers just gave you a good overview of one of those, right? In terms of Kernza, that is one of the primary new crops that's being released and going through commercialization today. I've been asked by a couple of the committee members to talk a little bit about the process, the $5,000 per year. How do we use those funds? You've all received this document. This basically is the most up-to-date information, and it provides the 16 platforms that describe the crops that are currently under development. When these resources move through the Department of Agriculture to the Dean's office, a call for proposals is sent out to the faculty associated with these 16 platforms. The faculty then develop proposals that are reviewed by a review committee. Recommendations are then made to the dean. The dean then decides on what projects are funded, right? And one thing I want to just bring up right up front, the funding that comes from the state of Minnesota through Clean Water Legacy, we've been very, very successful. We've been able to increase those fundings by 5 to 10x, right? In other words, $10,000, $10 million becomes $50 million, right? So we now have the 16 teens. We have a group of 55 people working across this set of new crop development platforms. We are bringing in substantial amount of money based on the state investment from federal funds, foundation funds that are then in place to continue to move this program forward. Let me just highlight two outcomes. Jake gave up my story earlier that we have now just released the first variety of Kernza. It's Minnesota Clearwater. It's named after the lakes and streams. We hope as we release more of these Kernza varieties, we'll continue to name them after the lakes and streams with the idea that these crops protect the water quality and enhance soil health across the state of Minnesota. I'll give you one other example. Based on this funding and other funding from other sources, we've been able to domesticate pennycress as a new oilseed crop and protein crop for the cropping systems in the state of Minnesota. A winter annual that would fit between the corn and soybean system to fill the brown in the fall. A new type of cover crop that would add economic value to the farmer as well as producing those ecosystem services, all right? So that will be rolled out in new varieties within the next 3 to 5 years. So the exciting part is that we have a series of these crops that have been developed to the point where they're now being rolled out commercially, being produced in the state of Minnesota. And what I would like to highlight is, this is a program that's attracting national and international recognition. Companies from all over the world, across the country, are coming to us and wanting to participate in the development of these new crops. So this is, you know, Cargill, General Mills, Kellogg, but not only the nationals, but the local companies as well. I mean, the smaller Birchwood Cafe using the grain in their food products. Lakewinds Food Co-op. You saw this already, but it's commercial. You can purchase crackers. The idea is that these are turning into real products. The development of just new crops is a dead end. So within the Forever Green Initiative, this is what we do on these platforms. We're organized from basic genomics, breeding, agronomics, food science, and commercialization. That's what's unique about our program, and the support that you provide helps keep those platforms in place that allows us to bring additional resources into the state of Minnesota.
Great. Thank you so much for your testimony. We have about 2 minutes left for the next two presenters. With our election certificates, we are also licensed to butcher names. Ann Schwagerl with Prairie Point Farm.
Thank you, Chair. For the record, my name is Ann Schwagerl. I am here representing Forever Green Initiative to testify in support of House File 661. I farm in Western Minnesota, and I'll try to go real quick. I farm in Western Minnesota in Big Stone County. I'm a grain and livestock producer operating 400 acres of corn, beans, small grains, and as of 2020, Kernza. I'd been watching the development of Kernza closely along with several of the other Forever Green Initiative crops over the past several years. My husband, who farms alongside of me, and I are routinely on the lookout for innovative practices to implement on our operation, including incorporating cover crops for cash purposes, reducing our tillage, and planting alternative crops to spread out our rotation. In the last few years of trade wars, climate insanity, and market volatility, if there are any lesson, farmers need economically viable third and fourth crop rotations to continue to manage risk on our operations. Following the release of MN Clearwater and the development of the market around the use of Kernza, I finally pulled the trigger and planted my first 40-acre field this past summer. We are eager to harvest it this upcoming July. Starting last June and continuing through the harvest season, I was able to participate in grower calls facilitated by the Forever Green Initiative, educating new and experienced growers on best practices for managing the crop from planting through harvest. Kernza is not a plug-and-play crop. There's been a learning curve to managing this crop, and the staff and the researchers, including Dr. Youngers at the University of Minnesota, has been with us as farmers every step of the way to ensure our success. I will echo his comments on that one. Kernza, with its incredibly deep perennial root system, also gives us another tool to continue to improve the soils on our farm, increasing our organic matter, as well as increasing our water infiltration rates for the continuing large rain events that seem to come annually now. Kernza is just one choice in the suite of Forever Green Initiative crops that I am continuing to watch, though, for implementation on my farm. As the genetics, agronomics, and market development continue to progress, I've been looking at incorporating camelina, winter barley, or pennycress to make my farm an even stronger tool for stewardship, resiliency, water quality, and enhancing the economic activity in my rural community. In order for these crops to actually be viable on farms, though, it requires investment. As a farmer, I appreciate the support shown by the state through the legislative process for the Forever Green Initiative in the past and ask for continued robust funding into the future. Thank you, and I'll wait till the end for any questions you might have.
Thank you very much. I think questions will have to be submitted in writing. We're up against the clock here. Next up, we have Dr. Nicole Atchison.
Thank you, Chair Sandine. I'm Nicole Atchison. I'm the CEO of Purus Holdings. It's a family-owned company, a family-owned food and ag company located here in Minneapolis. And I'm testifying in support of the bill specifically to address the Forever Green Initiative focus on the market development. So as a food and ag company today, working with brands in the space, that we see every day how consumer packaged goods are looking for new marketing claims to really grow on shelf and to meet the consumer purchasing habits. They're looking for crops and ingredients that can check the box on sustainable agriculture, soil health, water health, and traceability. And so today we've heard testimonies from my colleagues here on this bill, as well as multiple before, talking about the initiatives on the agriculture side. But it's really important that we go beyond just growing the crops in the field, and how do we scale a supply chain that can take those crops and get them to the ultimate brand manufacturers. My family company, Purus, is doing this in peas today. So yellow field peas, which are not a crop that we talk about a lot in Minnesota, but is a crop that's gaining momentum. And 20 years ago, when we started, the crops were much like the crops that the Forever Green Institute is talking about, something that was very niche and no one understood how to use in food. Today, you know, this year we're commissioning a plant in Dawson, Minnesota, about 2 hours west of Minneapolis, that's bringing 90 jobs to the rural community and will be one of the largest pea protein manufacturing plants globally and definitely in North America. We have a manufacturing plant today that runs in Turtle Lake, Wisconsin, another rural community. And I use this as an example to what the future can be with these crops if the commercialization efforts are done the way they can. Because the market tailwinds are looking for these sorts of solutions and for U.S. farmers who are growing them and can really carry that value proposition onto the shelf. But we all recognize that just growing the crop isn't success. Success is when we can grow the crop and market the crop. And the investment of the Forever Green Initiative into developing these supply chains is equally as important, if not more so, than the success in the field, because success in the field does not equal success. And so I just want to reiterate my support of the full suite of solutions that the Forever Green Initiative is doing, because it is truly addressing a market need, both for growers, for the planet, as well as for consumers. Thank you
so much for being concise. Representative Miller, if you can do this in 1 minute and get a 1 minute answer, I think we're on board.
I can. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm supportive of the Forever Green program. I've actually known about it since before I was in the legislature. I met Dr. Weiss at a presentation in Wilmer. It's a good program, but here's the key to it. It needs to make economic sense for the producers. And that's what we need to do, and that's what we always need to be focused on. I know that there was a bill earlier in session that, if you will, kind of, I wouldn't quite go as far as saying it was a mandate, but it starts pressuring beyond that economic sense. If we keep focus on that, this is a good thing that you're also going to get the producers out there fully supportive of. As you saw, heard from the one producer in Big Stone County, I have other people in my district that are doing the same thing. They want to do this, but it has to make economic sense. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your comments, Representative Miller. Next up, we have House File 1680, Chair Marquardt, regarding Northern Crops Institute grant.
Chair Sundin?
Excuse me.
Chair Sundin.
I'm sorry.
We're going to vote on that bill.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Representative Cleborn has a motion.
Thank you.
Oh, okay, that was a motion. I'm sorry. Let me get this back.
Chair Sundin, I'll just close by saying thank you to the committee. And I will renew my motion for House File 661 to be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resource Finance and Policy. If you haven't signed on to the bill, committee members, I would love you to join me in this work.
Okay, you've heard the motion. Mr. Smith, please take the vote.
Chair Sundin?
Aye.
Sundin votes aye. Vice Chair Vang?
Aye.
Vang, aye. Anderson? You're muted. Representative Anderson, you're on mute.
I'm going to pass. I'm not quite sure why this isn't being held over for inclusion. Didn't get a chance to ask that question. I don't think we've had enough discussion on this. Yeah, it's a good program. I'd like to know what their funding level has been in the past, but if it's going to move on, I'm going to pass.
Okay. Anderson, pass. Representative Burkle?
I'll pass as well.
Burkle, pass. Representative Eklund?
Yes.
Eklund, aye. Hansen, R.
Hansen, R, aye.
Hansen, R, aye. Hansen, J.
Hansen, J, aye.
Hansen, J, aye. Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, aye.
Cleavorn, aye. Lippert.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Lewick.
I'll pass. Maybe we'll have a chance to ask questions on the next committee.
All right. Lewick, pass. Miller.
Miller, aye.
Miller, aye. Nelson.
Pass.
Nelson, pass. Thompson. Thompson.
Thompson, aye.
Thompson, aye. All right, that's 9 ayes and 4 abstentions, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, that was, what did you say, 9 and 4? The motion fails and the bill will move on to the next committee. Thank you, Representative Cleavorn and presenters. Next up, we have Chair Marquardt, 1680. Chair Marquardt.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. So what House File 1680 would do would appropriate $60,000 in each of the next 2 years that would go to the Department of Agriculture, and then grants would go out to the Northern Crop Institute. And so the Northern Crop Institute has been in operation for about 40 years. It's a collaborative between 4 states, Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Montana. And their main purpose is to support the promotion, the development, the marketing of crops growing in these 4 states. And so they conduct educational seminars, courses, webinars, and since like 1983, they've actually involved like 133 nations, people that have come together, and they bring together commodity traders and customers, technical experts, and so forth. And so they help in the product development of Minnesota crops and add value to those, and they've been an economic driver in rural Minnesota. Their offices are located on the campus of North Dakota State University in Fargo. Their annual budget's about $2.5 million. They get roughly about $1 million from North Dakota, $75,000 from South Dakota. In the past, they've got around $47,000, $50,000 from the state of Minnesota. And Montana, while it does not directly provide funds, they get funds from Montana through their commodity groups. So members, this is an excellent collaborative that has helped market products for these 4 states. And I've got Mr. Mark Jerick here, who's the director of the Northern Crop Institute. And he could, if you would allow him to testify, he's got lots of other good information.
First of all, we're going to move the bill. Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 1680 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill.
Thank you. I'll ask that the testifiers be very, very brief. We're up against the clock here. Mr. Jurek, please.
Thank you, Chair Sundin, Chair Marquardt, members of the committee. My name is Mark Jurek. I'm director of the Northern Crops Institute. Chairman Marquardt did a nice job of summing up what we do. I just want to talk a little bit about our results. We recently did an impact analysis looking at our impact from 2018-19. We wanted to see how we changed the behavior of the people that attended our courses. Of the 330 people that attend our courses, and those people are going to be around 20% CEOs, COOs, general managers, 40% product development specialists, 40% purchasers. As a result of our courses, 95% have a greater confidence in U.S. supply chain, 99% have greater understanding of U.S. quality, and as a result of our course, 51% increased the purchase of commodities from the United States. If you look at what we did the last year virtually, we reached out to over 1,000 different participants from 55 countries. In a year's time, we'll hopefully see that same effectiveness. From a technical service standpoint, around 30% of the clients that we work with our Minnesota-based companies. The work that we do is confidential, but on average, those clients that we work with have increased their investment in the four-state region by 16.67%.
Thank you. Next up, we have Joe Smentek.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Joe Smentek. I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Soybean Growers Association. I work closely with the Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council in the state, and along with the Specialty Soya and Grains Alliance, a group that does special marketing for specialty crops and specialty varieties of soybeans around the world. I just wanted to support this bill, offer our support for all three organizations for this bill. As Mr. Jurek indicated, in the last 30 days, NCI has worked with SSGA to market soybeans in the Philippines, Thailand, and Europe. And Minnesota soybeans, the food grade business in the state, is around $250 million in farm gate sales. And the majority of those growers work with NCI to help with their global reach and get those export markets that are needed for the soybeans. In particular, we're very excited to partner with NCI as they have the technical expertise that was discussed earlier with Kernza in marketing and developing these new crops. Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council is working with the University of Minnesota to develop new lines of value-added soybeans that would be helpful and to add value to the growers, some different non-GMO and organic soybeans with some special qualities that we hope will be identity preserved, be able to be crushed in Crookston, Minnesota at our new Ag Innovation Campus that the legislature gave money for. NCI will be crucial in making sure that those value-added soybeans actually have those properties and can be marketed in the future. So we highly support this bill and the work done at NCI. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bruce Clevin. Do you have some comments for us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Bruce Clevin, I represent the Minnesota wheat growers and Minnesota barley growers. All I have to tell the committee is we're strong supporters of the bill. And we thank Chairman Marquardt for picking up this issue this year and carrying it forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
That's terrific. Thank you. Chair Marquardt, any comments before we renew that motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you so much. This is an excellent collaborative that helps Minnesota's agricultural economy and would appreciate your support.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Representative Vang.
Mr. Chair, I renew my motion that House File 1680 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt, Vice Chair Vang, and testifiers. 1680 is laid over.
Last Thank you, bill, Mr. Chair and members.
The last bill is House File 1805. Chair Eklund, please move your bill and take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 1805 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Do you have an amendment?
I do have an amendment, Mr. Chair. I will move the A1 amendment as well.
You want to describe that briefly?
Yes, originally when the bill was drafted, Mr. Chair, it was drafted with an open appropriation. The amendment simply adds $75,000 into each year of the biennium.
Any discussions on that amendment? Hearing none, seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Say nay. That motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. The bill as amended is before us. Please continue with your presentation, Chair Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill and the amendment restores funding to the Minnesota Turf Seed Council for applied research. Today I have Richard Magnuson from Magnuson Farms in Roseau, Minnesota to discuss the merits of the bill, restoring this funding. And Mr. Bruce Clevin is also available for questions.
Richard Magnuson, would you please identify yourself and present your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committees. I'm Richard Magnuson, and I farm near Rosa, Minnesota, where we grow a number of different crops, including small grain, oil seeds, and grasses for seed production. I also serve as president of the Minnesota Turf Seed Council, which is a group of growers, processors, and allied industry that represents the overall turf seed industry in northern Minnesota. The development of our industry goes back to the 1950s, with university research being done in northern Minnesota. At that time, they developed a variety of Kentucky bluegrass called Park. Previously, Kentucky bluegrass hadn't been grown in northern Minnesota. With the development of Park, that really spawned the industry. Eventually, there was about 50,000 acres of bluegrass being grown in northern Minnesota. Processing plants were built. Jobs went with those processing plants. And it got to be a very financial success for growers in northern Minnesota. More recently, the university has developed varieties of perennial ryegrass, which is another major component in most lawn seeds for growth in, to be grown in northern Minnesota. Again, that's acres have increased rapidly since 2000 with the development of those varieties. And that's the major grass seed being grown in northern Minnesota. Again, that long history of cooperation and development with the universities developed these crops that can withstand the harsh weather cycles in northern Minnesota. We're an area known for really extreme climatic events, heavy rains, and these perennial crops really provide economic sustainability for our growers in northern Minnesota. And the funding is for general support of the research in northern Minnesota. The research is done at the Rosa Farm includes not only grass seed, but all the other commodities, wheat, barley, soybeans, canola. Also work is done on that station for some of the forever green crops, cover crops also. So, and this money goes towards the technical staff, consumable expenses, electricity, fuel, seed, fertilizer. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee has.
We have time for questions. Any questions for that testifier from the committee? We also have Mr. Clevin available for any comments to add.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Bruce Clevin for the record. I represent the Minnesota Turf Seed Council. I don't have a testimony, but I do want to thank the author, Representative Eklund, for picking this issue up and Representative Burkle for signing on second. I also want to put a plug in for your committee staff, Mr. Chair. We realized yesterday that we had blank appropriations. It was introduced on Monday. You're hearing it Wednesday. And just the scramble on getting the amendment, Ms. Conley and Mr. Sullivan put this together very quickly yesterday, and I want to thank them for that.
Sometimes we do scramble in this committee, and we did earlier in this session, and we're actually going to end up ending this committee hearing early because we did scramble. But anyway, thank you very much. Any closing comments before you renew your motion, Representative Eklund?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. In Birchdale, Minnesota is a farm owned by Keith Hasbargen. Birchdale is on the very western edge of my district. Through the efforts and research done through the Minnesota Turf Seed Council, Mr. Hasbargen sells bluegrass seed to Spain and the Netherlands for the use of their soccer fields. When I found that out, it just amazed me. So this research truly has worldwide applications, and I ask you, Mr. Chair, and the committee for their support. I remove my motion that the bill be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Chair Eklund and Mr. Magnuson, Mr. Clevin. House File 1805, as amended, is laid over. Thanks for your cooperation, committee, and we are adjourned.